This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits: enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform: Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
You are listening to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 176, sponsored by Shiguru Death Frenzy by Funimation, in-stock trades, and Audible. Visit audiblepodcast.com/ifanboy for your free audiobook download. Hey, welcome to the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast, episode 176. I am Josh Flanagan, and I am here with
Connor Kilpatrick.
And of course,
Ron Richards.
That's gang. We're all here. iFanboy.com is our website. We like comics, so we made a website about it. Every week, we read a bunch of them, and one of us has the job of picking the very best one that they read. We call that the Pick of the Week. They write a review on Wednesday night about that book, and then we get together and record a podcast. That's this that you're listening to right now. We talk about that Pick of the Week, other books from the week, and other stuff, emails, voicemail. It's a cavalcade, I would say. I don't know what the literal translation of that is. But,
it's a frenzy. It's a comic book frenzy.
Extravaganza. It's a cornucopia. It's a
happy fun time.
Yeah,
what a place to argue.
Yeah,
you
shut up.
You McBastard.
Let's go get back to the comics.
Before we get to the show, we're going to be talking about uncomfortable topics of culture. Also, there will be spoilers about the books from the week. So if you haven't read your books, come back later after you have. Or, you know what? Story points be damned. It's an entertaining time. That's what I'm saying. This week, Connor, you had the pick. There you go.
This was a very light week for me. I only had 10 books, which is becoming very light. And for the most part, they were pretty good. There was a lot of big books that came out, a lot of books I was looking forward to. And at the end of the day, the book that I had the most fun reading was G.I. Joe Corbo number 1, which I'm sure was a surprise to many. It was a surprise to me. I know I've been talking up the whole G.I. Joe reboot since it's been out. This is the third book. There's a main G.I. Joe book, and then there's two miniseries, G.I. Joe Origins, which we talked about a few weeks ago, and G.I. Joe Cobra. And G.I. Joe is tough. You know, there's so much nostalgia wrapped up in G.I. Joe. It's for people our age, guys in their 30s or early 30s, late 20s. G.I. Joe was a big influence on their life. It was a cartoon that was on every day, and it got so many people into comic books. And they keep trying to recapture that G.I. Joe magic. Dark Horse tried it. Devils Do tried it. I think there was another company that tried it. And it never really goes anywhere after a while. The Devils Do line went very long. Actually, just ended last year. It went for many years, but it wasn't very good, I thought. So,
well, it was Josh's pick of the week back in 2001, wasn't it?
No, I read it the day after September 11th.
So you're kind of biased.
We're like, fucking USA! Yeah!
It was issue 1 and that was his pick, and it was the first 3 or 4 were good. But then they tried to stick too close to the Marvel storyline. They were using the same continuity. It just didn't work anymore. And then this reboot from IDW is a reimagining. It's the same characters or some of the same characters in a modern, more realistic world. And so far, so good. And one thing I thought, I was reading G.I. Joe Cobra, I was about 3 or 4 pages into it, and this is about Chuckles, who was the undercover agent, and he was the guy that wore the loud Hawaiian shirt, and he was the undercover guy. And about 3 or 4 pages in, I went, oh, wow, Chuckles is Jack Bauer. He's absolutely, this is 24.
Nice.
This is G.I. Joe through a 24 lens. And right now, they've got the talent to pull off this gritty, you know, urban, realistic G.I. Joe feel, and it's working, and it's weird. And I said in my review, if this didn't have G.I. Joe on the cover, this would have been the best spy book I'd read in a while. And it's sort of like The Circle. And it's really working so far. And the art in this is so strong. It's just like, it's this realistic sort of gritty, I keep saying gritty because it's a very violent book. There's people get shot, you know, G.I. Joe people never got shot. In here, you know, Chuckles is a badass secret agent who is having a meeting with a guy from Cobra who's trying to recruit him, and while he's having this meeting, he's noticing the guy had a broken wrist at one point, so he knows if that goes bad, he's going to break the guy's wrist again, and that's where the first spot he's going to go for. And then he knows, you know, he's determining his point of origin from his lighter and how he talks and his cigarettes, and it's all very sort of how you think it would really go down, and it's very, very different, but also works. I mean, he's sitting there in a Hawaiian shirt, but it doesn't seem silly like it kind of did in a little bit for Chuckles. I always thought Chuckles was kind of silly, back when I was a kid.
When I had that toy, I never knew what to do with him. Because you have the one guy covering grenades and body armor, and then there's this guy in a shirt with a handgun. I was like, what the hell's this? I don't want an undercover agent.
There wasn't a lot to do undercover-wise when you're on the floor of my living room with all the G.I. Joes.
This is what I'm saying.
The battle's already begun. There's no more undercover work to be had, Chuckles.
I actually had some deep cover Black Ops sting operations that lasted months in my living room. I was really invested into infiltrating the kitchen, really. It was
basically he lost his Chuckles figure under the couch. That's what happened. Oh, no, he's deep cover.
Chuckles was always the first one to get shot. he would show you how serious this was going to be by the battle in my living room. But it's really interesting and really good, really strong issue, and it really does work if you're just looking for a spy or a military story. At least these side books are working that way. I think the main book is kind of in the silly territory, and I think a lot of that has to do with because the art's kind of silly. And there's more gadgets and there's more robots, but so far these side books are just straight up military / espionage stories.
Who wrote
really
this
working.
One? Who wrote it?
This was a co-writing job between Mike Costa and Christos Gage.
Oh, okay.
And normally Christos Gage doesn't necessarily overly thrill me, but this has been really strong.
Is there anything Christos Gage isn't writing? So I feel like his name is on like a ton of books.
He's doing a lot of books.
Right while you can. Yeah. Really.
I think because he's sort of like a mid-level guy at the majors. He does a lot of the books at like Dynamite and IDW and
yes,
like,
you know, Wildstorm
books. Like he can headline those books. Because
he's not exclusive, so he does that. He does a lot of stuff for a lot of people.
Yeah, no, I know he does a lot of stuff at Wildstorm, and yeah, crazy. Good for him.
So the main plot of this book or this issue is that Chuckles he's having this meeting with Cobra, and he's being recruited but no one's actually said the word Cobra yet. And you flash back during this meeting where he was in G.I. Joe and he was kind of the wise ass, and Hawk, you know, drummed him out of G.I. Joe. That was the cover story, but the real story was that he was being sent undercover out into the world where he was going to become a mercenary and work his way up the ladder, you know, build a reputation so that finally, you know, after years, he would get called upon by the big groups and they would be able to infiltrate them. So this is the story of a guy who had to go down a dark path. And I mean, you see him flamethrowing villages and things like that, doing really bad stuff in order to keep his cover, in order to get higher up in the ladder, in order to get into these big groups. And it's the price you pay to do this sort of thing. You know, he's unrecognized. The only person that knows who does this is Hawk, and Jinx is his handler. And it's, you know, it's one man's, you know, war against terrorism, and what you have to do that, how you have to maintain and how you have to, you know, the compromises you have to make in order to get the job done. And it's very sort of realistic in that sense. I mean, there's also a big Cobra logo on the door at the end where he goes to meet the guy. But, you know, in between that, there's lots of shooting and running across rooftops. And it was just really strong sort of spy story in the G.I. Joe world.
Did it surprise you? Like, were you expecting to think this was okay, or?
I didn't know what to expect. I didn't really. I just knew I was going to buy all these G.I. Joe books, and about three or four pages in, I was like, oh wow! Like, I wasn't at all expecting it to be this realistic in this this way at all. So it was a big surprise. It was a big pleasant surprise, and it was really strong. And like I said, so far the side books are really, really kicking the main book's ass. I mean, the origin story was really good. This was really good as well.
Do you think the main book is suffering from having to tee up the movie, or?
I just think the main book is suffering because it's the tone is different. The tone is a bit more traditional, and it's not a bad book by any means.
Right.
It's just not as good as the side books.
Is there a main book that deals with the movie? Is that the same as the ongoing G.I. Joe story? Because I saw some of the covers, like they were like photo covers. Now that's the regular G.I. Joe book.
That's a fourth book.
Okay, that's what I thought.
There's a fourth book that's setting up the movie specifically. That is G.I. Joe. What's it called?
The movie.
Whatever.
Yeah, but it's basically dealing with the characters in the movie, like the.
And that
the,
has the, does that have anything to do with these?
I don't believe so. I didn't buy those.
Yeah, I picked this up. I picked up Origins number one, and I tried to pick up the ongoing ones, but I couldn't find them. But I did see the photo covers, and I thought, I don't want that.
No, that's not. Those aren't
photo cover on a comic book is the first thing to make me run away from it. If you see a photo on a comic book, I don't know if it was Mark Miller's Trouble that did that or what. But if there is a photo on the cover of a comic book, I don't want it. That's what I know.
So if you picked this up, what'd you think of it?
I liked it. I liked it a lot. You're spot on. It was great. The art was really Fuso. Strong by Antonio Fuso, like you said. It was a good spy book. It was I liked how it was very stark in look, I suppose. And because I think I wouldn't have expected this when you see G.I. Joe Cobra on the cover.
Absolutely not.
And I think that was what was really refreshing about it. You could have just had like the build up of Cobra Commander in his Hitler-like way, you know, and gathering followers and everything, and this was a different way into that. It was very, very strong. It was really good. This was among the best things that I read this week for sure. G.I. Joe Origins number one also was really good, although the art wasn't as strong.
No, the art. I was blown away by the art in this. Yeah. It was. I'd love if he was the guy in the main book, because I think that's what's really holding that book back. But
so yeah, Stark is
a great way to describe this.
Yeah,
it's really great. This is a mini, so you don't have to get too invested in this if you just want to read the.
And like, I would say to people who are listening to this and think, well, it sounds like something I want, but I don't want a G.I. Joe book. Try it. I think you might be surprised.
There really isn't the trappings of G.I. Joe are very light in this particular issue. I mean, you know, there's a Cobra symbol. He's at G.I. Joe briefly, but
Yeah.
Really, it's just about a guy who's an undercover agent.
I really like the scene at G.I. Joe.
Yes.
Where he's, hey, mister, I can't deal with your comments, because I can relate to that.
Yeah. I was surprised and really happy, and this is, you know, it's good. We'll ride it out till it implodes, as G.I. Joe always does. One of the bigger books that came out was Ultimatum 3, and I thought briefly about making this my pick, but I'm just not a big fan of David Lynch. I mean, David Finch. I'm a big fan of David Finch's art, taste thing, is just not one of my favorites. I think his art is also not as good as it used to be. Like when he did New Avengers, I didn't even like it then, but it was better.
Right. But you like this book, really?
I love the story; it's fantastic.
I thought this issue was just all over the place, and it was just like the classic case of Loeb trying to do too much with too little, and not having like there's just like every point in the issue where I wanted to focus in on what was happening, it moved on to another group of characters.
Because that's the point of the mini. It's cleaning the decks.
Yeah.
Cleaning the decks, Ultimate Universe. So it's moving quickly and it has to deal with lots of people, lots of characters, lots of scenarios.
I mean, that's the one thing that I'll give it credit for is that if it's setting up the new status quo in the Ultimate Universe and it's wiping out a lot of the ultimatized versions of people, you know, and so maybe finally now, you know, at least in terms of the X-Men and the Avengers / Ultimates or whatever, they can start to have their own kind of, you know, start forging their own kind of way as far as stories go and shake the idea of just, you know, modern updating the Marvel Universe. So I thought in that way it's Shakespearean in how it's killing everyone. But
right.
I don't know. It was just far too jagged for me. At every point, you know, another scene, and it went way too fast for me personally.
Who was killed?
Who wasn't?
Lots of people. Yeah. In this issue, Nightcrawler's dead. Hank Pym dies.
Jan Van Dyne dies.
But she's being downloaded into Jakosta.
Yeah, so sure. A whole bunch of X-Men, Dazzler.
Thor chooses to stay in Valhalla and let Captain America live again. So Thor is technically dead, though he could easily come back. Daredevil died last issue. It's just they're really just laying waste to sort of simplify the universe. The one thing I really like about it is these and this is one of the few events where shit actually happens.
Yeah,
you know. They're actually doing things. This is actually going to change the Ultimate Universe. It's actually going to live up to its word. You know, it's actually going to do things. And people are dying, and people are really being affected by it, unlike other events just in general where things don't normally happen or change at the end of it.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited to see the Ultimate Universe after this because at this point, when I started, I read all the books. And then by the end, I've only been reading Spider-Man. And even Spider-Man, I think, for about a year, has been coasting on good feelings.
Yeah,
I think it's been a solid book, but I think it hasn't been as great as it was in the beginning because I think it's just sort of the downside to having the same creative team for so long is that it does sort of start to coast at certain points.
Yeah,
and I think whatever the new status quo is after this is over, it might be a good shot in the arm for the book, like Stuart Immonen was when he joined.
Yeah, you know, I'm really excited for the new Spider-Man. I think it should be really. I'm hoping, and there's you know going to be some level of time jump and dealing with the change in status quo and whatever. So I'm really kind of curious what that brings. So,
and I'm probably going to buy them all again. Yeah.
People like this. I've been enjoying Ultimate Spider-Man. I'm cool with it. I don't need it to change.
Yeah.
So, Connor, you're wrong and stupid.
Right. Well, speaking of event books, Invincible number 60 was an event book in a single issue.
I'm curious what you thought about this. And I found, by the way, that reading Kirkman's little aside at the end, his little note was very telling.
Yeah. Well, why?
Well, okay, you have a much longer history with Image Comics than I do. So while I was going through it, like, I recognize a lot of these characters, but I don't necessarily know who a lot of them are.
Yeah.
And basically, to me, this was, like you said, it was an event book in one 30-page issue. And it was, I mean, it's a lot like we were talking about with Ultimatum. You got to cram a lot of stuff in there.
Yep.
And ultimately, there was too much to fit and actually be able to tell much of a story. And basically, in the beginning of his letter column, he basically kind of copped to it.
Yeah.
Without saying directly, this didn't quite work. He pretty much said, this didn't quite work.
Yeah.
And so, like, on the one hand, like, no, it was not the best issue ever, but I think I'd seen a couple of places where people were like, that was terrible. And I was like, no, because it was trying to do something.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it was, and I know that that is such a double standard of stuff, but like, you could see, like, well, let's see what happens if we try to do this with this book because we have the freedom to. And it's just one issue. And it was kind of funny. And I was also just looking at it from a technical standpoint of trying to put that much stuff into it. And it ultimately didn't really work.
Right. Yeah. I mean, my same criticism of Ultimatum I would have for this issue is that so much happened and it happened so fast that it was, you know, that every moment where I wanted to see more, it moved on to the next moment or another set of scenes. But for some reason, I thought it worked a little better than an Ultimatum because Ultimatum, there's still another issue to come. Like, there was no resolution where this definitely – it finished the event in the last issue. It was like, okay, now, you know, this is the new status quo and this is what happened. Just to fill people in without spoiling it for Connor, just kind of the basics of what the story is that Angstrom Levy –
Well, don't do that part.
Okay.
A bunch of alternate Invincibles from other universes show up and they wreck house.
Yep.
They fight every superhero team in the Image universe and everything gets wrecked.
The one thing this did have going for it, for at least for me personally, aside from it being the Image universe and there being so many characters and it's always fun to see, you know, Madman fighting next to Savage Dragon and things like that. The early on, the double page spread of all the alternate universe Invincibles flying in. You give me alternate universe, alternate versions of characters, and I'm sold. You know,
that was cool.
Yeah, because now in my mind, there's a whole world of, ooh, what is that Invincible doing, and why is he like that, and what is that? And I liked how they're all based on the main Invincible that we know, but with slight modifications and little things that are pulled from, like there's the one Invincible with like the grifter style mask. And then there's an Invincible with more of a Superman kind of thing, and then there's one that's more Vulturemite, and then it's just – I just thought it was really like – I love the imagination with that of pulling in alternate versions of characters.
You know what I liked? And I know I'm not like a continuity person very much, but I liked that the first page of it instantly brought you back to an earlier point in the story.
Yep.
And
yep.
I don't want to spoil what that is, but like when you see it, you're like, oh, right, that.
Right.
And you knew right where you were, and you knew right where you were coming from.
Yep.
I like that the brother – was a difference in his story that everybody else, because I kept finding myself like, well, how can he beat these people if they're the same as him?
Right, yep.
So the brother becomes important, and I really like how the brother hasn't been – the brother flipped out that one issue, which was awesome. but like that hasn't been a thing like you have to think not that way. Like it's been
right,
okay,
yeah.
Well, let me consider this. I think that's been really interesting. But there was too much and you lose track. Like I remember one time Adam Eve got hurt and apparently was off panel.
Yeah.
I kept going back to be like, wait, what happened? Where'd she?
Yeah.
Cause they flew in together and then all of a sudden he's bloodied.
Yeah. And he's like screaming. He's like, you got to save her. I'm like, what happened to her? Yeah. Yep. So, but that said, it ended with, you know, the world pretty much wrecked and, you know, Mark just saying, my God. And now I want to know where do we go from here? So in that way, it succeeded more than Ultimatum in my mind. But that's because it was one issue versus four.
But you'll get there too, with Ultimate.
Yeah.
Apparently I'm not reading it. Also, you've got to give Otley credit.
Oh, Otley's, the art is amazing. The art was great. Yeah.
I mean, like all this shit going on. I mean, and the dude. And
it's great to see him do the other characters too. I mean, it's always fun to see an artist, you know, try to, you know, draw the Darkness or Shadowhawk or whatever, you know, like it was neat. And Pit, I didn't even know Pit was back. So
I don't even know who Pit is.
Pit's the big Dale Keown Hulk.
Dale Keown, yeah.
Yeah, Hulk guy with the chains.
I don't think this is quote unquote continuity.
Right.
Like this isn't like Dynamo 5 isn't going to suddenly be wrecked.
Right. Yeah. No, they're just, he's having fun in his little universe. So.
Josh, are you okay?
Yeah.
Sure. After reading Wolverine 71.
Oh, well, it's alternate, so it's cool.
No, it's not.
All right.
No, this is the official end of the Marvel Universe?
It is.
Fine. You know what I didn't like about Wolverine 71 is that Hawkeye was kind of a, oh, well, gosh, look at, like they played him like he was kind of dumb.
Yeah.
Like he didn't see all this stuff coming, which,
well, he's blind.
He was desperate. He was desperate to get back in the game. I kind of bought it. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I could definitely see that. I just thought, for me, I read it as he was so desperate to be a hero again that he overlooked the fact that he was being set up.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I mean, this is just it's the same thing. It's the porn.
It's exactly those exact word in my, you know, it's like, and it's again, it's classic Miller, like. Just like, look at this cool thing. And then you're like, but what? No, look at this cool thing now. I don't want to explain that. Look at this other thing. and it's done really well. Like, this is a giant Hank Pym skeleton. Anyway, now we're in the city.
Yeah, but it's all as you said, it's all very interesting and cool, and I like the idea that you speed past it and don't get the story behind it.
Which is what would happen if you were driving past it.
Yeah.
And you know, as if it needs to be said, he can draw. This McNiven guy.
Oh man.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. It's stupid.
Yeah.
he's hoarding talent. I think he's got too much of the world's surplus talent, and this could kill us all.
So, how did you like this?
Yeah, no, I thought it was great. I mean, it was totally. I mean, you know, so it picks up with Wolverine and Hawkeye being chased by the Venom dinosaur, that's just a great idea. The idea of Venom merging with something from the Savage Land, you know, and then has them take sanctuary in Emma Frost's little mutant kind of haven area. And then, Josh, you got not only did you get Hawkeye's demise at the end, supposedly when he gets shot in the head, but early in the issue, Josh, did you get excited to see your boy?
Yeah, that was good. Although, again, it brings up the question of how powerful is Black Bolt, his little speech thing.
Yeah,
I think that at some point it got blown up too high so that it was unusable.
Right.
You know, so when he says it, like his merest whisper can level a mountain. Yeah. You know. But no, that was good stuff.
So the Black Bolt, because you know Venom is his weakness is sonics, so he says stop to Venom, and the dinosaur gets purged of the Venom crap.
And Black Bolt, coy little shush.
Yes, and then you know the like we said the huge they drive by Pym Falls, and it's the huge skeleton of Hank Pym as Giant Man where he fell, and then you see
although in the map. It was called Pym Cross in the beginning.
Oh, it is. Oh, interesting.
Also, they said Connecticut. Clearly, that's way down. That's down in Maryland.
Yeah. Oh, weird. Well, Miller's not from here.
No.
And then when we go into the city, it's like we're entering Connecticut. And I was like,
and the shot of the shot of it, by the way, is clearly New Jersey. So
yeah, weird. Questionable geography, but so they go into the new city. What is it called? New Babylon, and it's a very New York style
Long
city.
Island,
yeah, it looks like it's and it's a very New York style city that the Red Skull's built, and there's a huge Red Skull statue of him crushing the heroes, and then we find out that
he's the president.
Yeah, and then we find out that Hawkeye is meeting a group of rebels, and he's going to deliver Super Soldier Serum to them to help their kind of revolution. But turns out it's a double cross, and he gets shot. So
he should have known when the mustache was there.
Yeah,
that guy's
that dude with the fake hair and the mustache. Like I was trying to figure out who that was, but I didn't come up with anything. So
I don't think that's fake hair. I just think he's looking like Hitler. But
oh, good point.
It's just fun.
Yeah,
it's fun.
Yep,
and it's beautiful. And the stuff with Dr. Doom was good. And
yeah,
it was just fun.
This is sure enough to be a great. This is going to be a great little collection, I think.
What is McNiven doing after this? Because I will buy it.
Okay.
There's got to be something you wouldn't buy.
ROM Space Knight.
No, I'd buy that. I would totally buy that.
No, it's got something. I don't know.
Some sort of German midget porn,
like the death of Hal Jordan. Like you wouldn't buy that.
No, I know it would be the Kyle Rayner Ascension. Yeah.
I'd buy a Kyle Rayner book right now.
No, but Kyle Rayner is the one true Green Lantern.
Jason Todd book.
Yeah, Jason Todd Kyle Rayner buddy book. Road trip.
That was Countdown. That was called Countdown.
Yeah, but McNiven didn't do it.
Apparently, what I bought is it.
The Connor won't not buy anything.
Yeah,
right. I'm like Mikey. I will buy it. So that was good. I mean, that was also, you know, that could have been pick of the week, but it was also more of the same.
Yes.
Which was also excellent, but at the same time, it didn't shock me as G.I. Joe did. So that was probably why G.I. Joe was over the top. And now, the crowd howls for blood, as crowds do. As two damaged warriors sacrifice flesh and bone in a perverse test of wills. Shiguri Death Frenzy. Fujiki Jinosuke and Iroki Saigen, two legendary samurai, share a long and violent past. Bitter rivals from the moment they locked eyes, these warriors inflicted wounds on each other that would have destroyed lesser men. As the final chapter of the saga unfolds, they must summon the strength for one last battle, a battle where only one shall survive. Take home the Blu-ray and DVD on March 31st. It's Shiguri Death Frenzy. The beauty is in the kill. Visit Funimation.com/Shiguri That's HIGURUI for more details. I'm going to say it different every time. That's
I don't want to buy it as much as I did last week.
No.
Well,
but I still kind of want to buy it.
It's
in
summer.
In my head, though, I heard like that.
Samurai. Oh, that was
and then a girl went. That's kind of how that goes, I think.
Next time, I'm going to put some Beats by the RZA behind me as I read.
Have you considered GZA instead?
I might do that.
All right, I think that's a good way to keep it going.
Be the way I go.
So, Uncanny X-Men number 507, Matt Fraction and Terry Dodson. This was really interesting because, you know, the Uncanny, you know, like the Uncanny X-Men has been kind of, you know, it's been okay since the relaunch and moving them to San Francisco, and I've been enjoying it. But this issue
there hasn't been a lot of buzz about it.
There hasn't. No, there really hasn't been. And I wouldn't say this issue should bring about that buzz. But what I thought was interesting about it was that it was very, I don't know if yeoman is the right word, but it was very good. You know, it was very respectably good. And what I thought was interesting was that, you know, we've kind of got two stories going on at once where, you know, Beast and Angel are investigating something. Honestly, I'm not quite sure. But something to do with the future of mutant kind and all that kind of deal. And then at the same time, Colossus is dealing with the loss that he feels of the loss of Kitty. And he's kind of taking out his anger on a local kind of Russian kind of mafia kind of thing in San Francisco. And so in this issue, what you've got is you get those two stories being told in parallel. And what Fraction and Dodson did, which I thought was really interesting, was that they told the stories at the same time and connected them through like actions. So there's one moment where, you know, where somebody, you know, gets punched in San Francisco by Colossus, and then the next panel is someone reacting to getting punched in the Beast Angel storyline. So I thought it was a neat way to tell that story, and it flowed really, really well. So it was really, I mean, it was, I read it and I had a good time. It was like, I'm having a good time reading the X-Men, and it ended with apparently Magneto getting his powers back from the High Evolutionary, which is sure to be interesting down the road, I'm sure. But yeah, he's just doing a very respectable job, I think. So
I heard that Colossus got a Kitty tattoo.
Yes, at the end, yeah, he did. Well, because that was the whole interesting gimmick, is that how does Colossus get a tattoo? Because, you know, his body armor would protect him from any harm, so he had to like consciously deal with the pain and not armor up and allow the pain to happen. So, you know, kind of obvious metaphor there, but it was good. It was interesting, and there was a little more intrigue in terms of what Cyclops is doing with this whole, with the whole base in San Francisco, and he's talking to the mayor and saying that it looks like he's building a militia, and it ends with him saying, not a militia, an army. And so there's a little, you know, intrigue as to what's going on in Cyclops' head about, you know, the future of the X-Men. But yeah, I'm really enjoying it, and it looks like Greg Land is back next issue, so that should be fun. So
well, Wolverine aside, Azrael Death's Dark Knight number one is probably the best looking book of the week. Art by Fraser Irving, who
nice.
Did the Clarion and the Witch Boy segment of Seven Soldiers and a couple
Guttsville.
Of issues. Robin and Guttsville. The story was okay. It's not John Paul Valley, it's a new Azrael, but I wanted to mention it because it's absolutely beautiful. And if you see it in your comic store, you should take a flip through it. It's a beautiful looking book. It's a different kind of style than McNiven. It's more painterly and more sort of classic. But it's just I had a great time reading it just for the art alone. Story was all right.
Cool.
But just wanted to mention that.
If I had to choose a pick of the week, I probably would have gone, this is going to surprise people, but Hellblazer. This is the end of the third part of the first arc that Pete Milligan's doing after he took over as the regular writer and the Mysterio.
You're going to have to turn in your Pete Milligan hater card.
Hey, you know what? Some people are good at doing some things, but not others.
I'm not blaming you. I'm just saying. I'm informing you. You have to turn it in by 5 o'clock.
There are some people who can do, like, I like one thing they do, but everything else they do is terrible. I cannot think of who those people are at this moment, but they do exist. It was a three-part story. I think it was three. Where
George Lucas?
Part 3 of 3 of Infectious. Basically, like, he just had this horrible, nasty scab all over him for some reason, and it had to do with when he was a young magician, and there was a labor dispute, and he cursed one of the labor leaders. See, scab. That's the double entendre. And it's just a really, really nice character piece. It was a self-contained three stories. You could have not read anything before or after, and you get that whole story, and it's exactly what it should feel like. Giuseppe Camuncoli, I think, is a name that people are going to start hearing a lot more. He's done a couple of these Hellblazers, and I've heard C.B. Sobolski mention his name a lot, which means that he's going to be doing a lot of Marvel work at some point. And he's very good. I like it very much. He got John onto the double-breasted suit in this one, so it's good to go. It's great, great issue, great, great little story. So here's to high hopes on that stuff.
Okay.
Have either of you guys read Joe Kelly's Bad Dog?
I missed the first issue, and so now I'm waiting for the trade.
Okay. I bought this on the strength of the fact that Kelly's sort of been doing so much stuff lately, and it's been pretty good. Like, he's, you know, we've said he's having his comic book renaissance, and it's not a concept that I thought that I would like very much. Basically, it's a werewolf who is a bounty hunter, and he pals around with a little fat guy who is really he's both religious and extremely crude. So he basically spends the whole time creatively swearing in the name of Jesus. It's a little silly, but I like it. The art by Diego Greco, who I've never heard of, is fantastic. It's a really nice-looking book. It doesn't look like anything else. And the coloring, and he does all of that stuff. And it's just it's a really, really good-looking book. It's definitely not for the kids. It's a
this
little
is the sexy one, right?
It's not – well, no, it's not very sexy.
Is it one of his books about – sex?
That might be Bang Tango from Vertigo.
Oh, that's what that one is. Yeah,
yeah. This is more violent and sort of disturbing. It's almost like a Garth Ennis book. I think he said something like that when I interviewed him. Like, it's like his tribute to Garth Ennis. But it does have that, like, the main character is interesting enough that you want to know what's going to happen with him, and it's not just a bunch of crudity for the sake of itself. It's good. It's actually succeeding where I think The Boys is failing a little bit. At least it's getting stuff done a little quicker. But this is the second issue. I really dug the first one. Again, the art is fantastic. In the same way that you said they should flip through Asriel, they should definitely take a flip through this book and take a look at it.
Putting it out?
It's Image. Okay. It's Image. This is the second issue.
Cool.
It's good. Cool. I like it.
And finally, this is almost the same thing about Asriel, but Supergirl 39. Jamal Igoe is just killing this book. His art is just getting better and better, and there's some marvelous pages in this issue. So much so that in the last, very end of the issue, when randomly there's another artist for a couple of pages in the middle, and then it goes back to Igoe, it's just kind of like a head scratcher. But he is just those couple. I was just, wow, he's getting really, really good. He's just killing this book.
Awesome.
And the story's really good too. But he's Igoe's getting better and better.
Cool.
So it's like a whole new artist from when he started. I remember a year or so ago when he was doing like Teen Titans. He was good there, but he's just getting ridiculously good now.
It's great when an artist is given like a ongoing kind of thing to really kind of grow into, and you know, because I think that they need that repetition and that sort of consistency.
Some do.
Yeah, some do. Exactly. I mean, as opposed to going from character to character to character to really get a feel for what they're working, and it's great to see Igoe doing good on it. So awesome.
And the story is still staying strong, so cool. Good stuff.
Sterling Gates, right?
Yep.
Cool.
There were no books this week that we could strongly disagree on.
No, actually, I had about 10 books too, and it was a great week for me. I thought it was really, really good.
It was a really strong week.
Yeah, it was.
Nothing was bad. There was no bad books.
So if you go to ifanboy.com/comics, you can see all the books that came out this week, and then there you can do your pull list, and you can come back and then rate and review the books. And we have a couple of reviews from the iFanboy community, and the first one comes from ZenoscopeFan7, who reviewed Amazing Spider-Man number 588 and gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 3 out of 5, and about 10% of the iFanboy community made this their pick of the week at the time of recording. And Zenoscope Fan 7 says, I didn't know there were 7 Zenoscope fans, says, finally, a Spider-Man issue that really has that classic Spidey feel. So many questions were answered in this particular issue. I felt that with the constant rotating Spidey staff, I would never see any closure to anything that happened in Spider-Man. I couldn't be more wrong. It's been a long time since I've read a Spider-Man book that really had me on the edge of my seat. This is what Spider-Man is all about, and I hope to see more of the same to come in the future. And Zenoscope Fan 7 is absolutely correct. This is like the long story arc that's been going on for a year is wrapped, and it was great. My only criticism was, and Connor, you're reading this, right?
The inker?
Yeah, the inker changed. Klaus Janson didn't ink the whole book, and it was really noticeable.
It was a whiplash moment, like I had a Supergirl where I was like, whoa, what happened? It went from Klaus Janson to Tom Palmer, and they're just different styled.
Five pages of the total book, but it was so starkly different. And I had to look to see if the colorist changed, and the colorist didn't change, which yeah, I thought was interesting. Yeah. So
Palmer's cleaner.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Romita. Palmer does much cleaner inks, whereas Klaus Janson's are much sketchier.
Yep.
So it really was noticeable. All of a sudden, everybody got really, really clear looking.
Yeah, got really, really, really clear looking.
Yes.
Other than that,
it was fantastic. Yeah,
yeah, that was the only negative I could take away from it. But it was a great resolution to the storyline and the whole menace and the mayor thing and everything like that. Spider-Man's been awesome. So,
did you read the letters page, Ron?
Yeah, I did.
What with specifically? The swapping out the writers?
Yeah, totally. Yep.
So the Brain Trust, which was Gale and Guggenheim and Slott, and those guys are all leaving the book, and they're being replaced. Guggenheim's staying. They're replaced by Joe Kelly. I guess Slott's staying too. Yeah. Joe Kelly, Mark Waid are the new writers, along with Fred Van Lente.
Yep, and Zeb, Bob and Gale. Zeb Wells. Yeah.
So. He was also one of the old guys. Bob Gale, overlooking it all. So they're kind of they're adding a couple new guys to the whole thing. Yeah. Kelly's issues are really good. So was Mark Waid. So that'll be good.
Yeah, exactly. So keep it going, man. They're doing a good thing on Spider-Man. So
next up, Sammy. Groom Lake number one, which you give a 3 out of 5 for story and a 4 out of 5 for art. Nobody said this was their pick of the week, and it almost wasn't Sammy's. This wasn't on my pull list, and I wasn't really aware it was coming out, so I looked through it at my LCS surprised. Glad I did, because I forgot how much I enjoyed Temple Smith's art. This issue was good. It introduced you to some characters and was very much a building block. It could have benefited from a few more pages, maybe an exercise double first issue. But my interest is there, so I'll have a look and make my decision for the second issue. For now, I'd recommend anyone interested in Temple Smith, Ben Temple Smith, that is, should read this, and anyone looking for an alien story, not necessarily genre-defining, but an alien story in any comic form should pick this up.
So this was IDW, I assume?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Temple Smith is like, he's always got books out.
Yeah.
That you don't hear about, all of a sudden there they are, and there's always a bunch of them, and it's like he's every time passive. You turn around, he just does another book by him out.
Yeah,
but this is a new one. This is one if you like Temple Smith. Maybe you didn't know he had another book out. But Groom Lake is an alien story. Apparently, it's like an X-Files-y kind of thing. But
I wonder if it has vampires.
loves those aliens. Vampires.
Do they have teeth?
So head over to ifanboy.com/comics to check out more about Groom Lake or any of the other books that came out this past week and the books coming out next week, and do your pull list and do your ratings and reviews.
Next week we're back to a big of books.
Is it really? Ugh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's better off then. all right. So I want to take some time to tell you about Audible.com. It's the internet's leading provider of spoken audio entertainment, information, and educational programming. Content from Audible is downloaded and played back on your computer, your CD player, iPod player, whatever device you use to play audio on. You can play Audible audiobooks on it. They've got over 80,000 hours of audio programs from over 270 content partners that include leading audiobook publishers, broadcasters, entertainers, magazines, newspaper publishers, podcasters, and business information providers. So basically, you can listen whenever and wherever you want, just like the podcast you're listening to right now. Audible.com actually has over 1,000 science and technology and over 1,100 science fiction and fantasy titles, with more being added all the time. They've got over 50,000 titles to choose from. Every genre, Audible's got it covered. So if you like books, if you like audiobooks, Audible's really the only place to go for it. And what we're really excited to tell everybody about is that if you go to audiblepodcast.com/ifanboy, you get a free audiobook download when you sign up for a free trial today. So go to audiblepodcast.com/ifanboy, get a free download. You can't really beat that. Try it out. I know I've listened to John Hodgman's book as audiobook, which is I found superior to actually reading the book. Do you guys listen to any audiobooks ever? So,
yeah, I've done a few. It's a couple that I've actually read first and then listened to later, which I thought was interesting, which is kind of cool because I did that with Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. Right. The Audible ones are cool because they don't go and you get to keep them. Say that you download this book and you don't want to keep the subscription or something like that. You'll have the book forever. But if you like it and you're traveling all the time and running out of podcasts, it's a really good way to spend some extra time and do that. The player's nice. It remembers your place in the book, all that stuff. Yeah.
Totally. Audible is the way to go. So audiblepodcast.com/ifanboy. Check it out today.
Email time. Our first email is from Josh from Westchester, New York, and he says, I just went into my comic store to pick up my stack, which I allowed to pile up for far too long, and found to my dismay that it did not include the last issue of Final Crisis, despite the title being on my pull list. I've been a loyal customer to the store for over 10 years, or almost 10 years, and have stayed with them through location changes and college. Though I'm partly at fault for not coming on a regular basis, I've never not purchased my entire stack the entire time I've been with them. Is it right for them to just give away my reserve comics to other customers? I can distinctly remember missing issues of great runs, i.e. Bendis and Daredevil. Comic store owners constantly complain about having to compete with larger bookstores, direct subscriptions, and Amazon, yet here I am, a loyal customer being pushed towards these bigger distributors to try to complete a story that I've followed for a year now. At a certain point, shouldn't loyalty run both ways?
Ooh, okay.
I knew you would.
No. The dude's a retailer. And if you are letting your stuff pile up for a really long time and he has a customer who's coming in right then and says, I need to buy this book, and he can sell that book when he doesn't really know if you're coming back or whatever. I mean, unless you're like really close buddies with him, you know, listen, I've done that. I've gone into a comic store and I'm standing there. I'm saying, I need to buy this issue, and you don't have it on the racks. And they go, well, you're here. Hang on. Let me grab it from one of the people who isn't here. I mean, it is a little bit first come, first serve. And it's not like, I mean, it's not easy to be a retailer of comic books. You don't make a ton of money. You got to make your sales where you can. You know, that's sort of a reality of business. Now, granted, you've got to pull this, you do a thing, but I find everybody kind of handles that a little differently. But, you know, if you don't do a subscription thing with him specifically where you order your books ahead of time and he orders them specifically for you, you don't really have much right on that stuff, I guess.
I mean, it's tough because, I mean, I've been in stores that have held books for me, and I would probably be pissed if they gave them away because they were holding them for me. But if I don't come in regularly,
that's the contract.
Yeah, that's the contract. I mean, and then on the other side of things, one of the stores I shopped in, I didn't have a pull list, and I would want a book, it would be sold out, and they go, hold on, and they go into the file and give me one of the other customers because they figure, okay, that guy comes in once a month, and I can reorder it and replace it. You know, so you've got to have some sort of idea that I think the retailer has a responsibility to give you the books you want. But if he's out of stock on something because he had to sell it to somebody who wanted it, you can't fault him. Just say, okay, great, can you get it back in for me? And most often they can. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think if you're at a store and you're there for 10 years, then the guy you're holding books for the guy should hold the books for you.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, if that's
– well, the question is, are they really holding books for you, or are they just pulling the ones so you can come pick them up if they're available?
Right.
Like, it depends on what the specific – you know, what the deal is with the place.
Yeah. It's tough.
Like you're making a reservation. If you're making a reservation to pick up for these books and they don't reserve them for you, then what's the point of making the reservation?
Well, but that's the thing. If the retailer is spending, let's say, $2 on a book, so he's spending $2 and it's sitting in a folder waiting for you to come in, that's $2 that he's got out there that he can't recognize until you come in whenever you feel like it. Like, that's what Josh says.
Then he shouldn't have the system where he holds books for people.
Well, there should be some sort of policy that books that are reserved will be held for a week. You know what I mean? Some sort of thing like that, where there's a level of expectation. I don't know. It is dicey.
I agree. Yeah. He should set it up, but if you're going to hold books, you hold the books. If you don't hold the books, I'm not shopping at your store. You know what I mean? If you have a policy, you don't live up to it, I'm not shopping at your store anymore.
Yeah, but it's tough to turn down a sale. You know, I've been in that position.
Sure,
retail,
but then don't offer to hold books for people. Then,
yeah,
if you're going to hold them until someone else wants it, then that's not holding it. That's just not putting it on the rack.
Wow, this is a heated subject.
This is Connor's line in the sand theory.
Yeah, it is.
You have a lot of lines and a lot of sand.
if you have a policy and it's I'm going to do this for you,
yeah,
great, I'll do it. And then you don't do it, then
right. But part of that policy is two ways. And I'm saying, okay, great, and I will come in and pick them up. And if you don't come and pick them up, you kind of lose your opportunity. You know,
his first
only
sentence was
only
I allowed it
only
to.
But only if you're told ahead of time, hey, after a month, if you don't pick this up, I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly. I think there should be some sort
then
of.
Then I have no problem with that. If that's what the policy is, then that's your own fault for not picking them up. But if that's never stated, when I was a kid, I had a pull list. I didn't go for a month or 2 months. I'd go and I'd get my big stack of books would be there, and I'd sell them because that was the contract between me and the comic store was he'd hold them for me.
Yeah,
it was a different time then. They were making a lot more money. There was a lot more comic shops. There was, you know, you could do. Here, you know, they gotta make the sales where they can. I mean, people are razor thin margins.
That's fine. They don't offer to hold books if you're not going to hold them. Yeah. That's the point.
I know it's tough. It's tough. It's a lot of gray area in this one. I can see it in both directions. So,
anyway, I'm not going to be Connor's retailer. I can tell you that much.
I would have a pull list for this very reason.
Right. Ryan W. says, after reading the first issue of Battle for the Cowl, I was wondering if you guys each have a favorite for who's going to be the new Batman. I like Dick Grayson. That's him talking, not me. While taking up the mantle, catalyzed? That's not a word. By the death of Tim Drake with Damian as the new Robin. How about you guys?
Tim Drake died?
No, he's not going to die.
Oh, he's saying the catalyst for Dick Grayson taking up the mantle would be the death of Tim Drake and then Damian being the new Robin.
Tim Drake's not going to die. Yeah.
No, he's Red Robin, probably. Everyone knows who I want. Who do you want? Ron, I know you were excited about this. And
really, really excited. I'm really excited. I'm hoping Bullock is going to take up the mantle, right? The cop?
That would be awesome.
Yeah, wouldn't it? Awesome. Fat Batman?
Fat cigar-smoking, unshaven Batman.
Yeah, that'd be great. No, I don't care. It's going to be Dick Grayson. We know it. Right, I mean, it's gonna
I hope so. I don't know that we know it, but
well, let's see. They introduced a new Nightwing and Superman, so he can't be Nightwing anymore.
Right.
He's
either going to be Batman, Red Robin, or he's going to die. That's the only really options we've got.
Yeah.
We know Damian's Robin. We know it, and so then you've got Tim Drake and Dick Grayson, and probably. Most likely Dick Grayson will be Batman and Tim Drake will be Red Robin. That's just the most likely scenario. But you never know. You know what I mean?
Jason Todd.
I don't care.
Yeah.
All right, if you were writing it, who would you make?
I'm literally not even paying attention to the story. I don't know what's happened or I read that Battle for the Cowl. I don't know. I'm just when's Bruce Wayne coming back? Because this is I don't care. Like I literally could not care less.
So you're not going to buy any of the Batman books?
Not right now. I'm not terribly interested in them, no.
You're not going to buy the Frank Quitely, Grant Morrison book?
Now, is that in continuity? It's yes. Not. It is?
It is.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. Meh.
So if you have an opinion as to who knew the Batman, then who is
mad at me because of that, by the way. Just, fuck you.
If you have an opinion as
to really don't care. Don't buy good books. That's fine with me.
I might check that out because I like the art team on it or the creative team on it, but... Like the overall thing, like I'm not like, oh my god, I can't wait to find out because it doesn't make a difference to me.
Email contact@ifanboy.com with any questions.
Fine. After the fact, though, you find out, oh man, you know what was awesome was the whole who's going to be the Batman thing. You would probably want to get the trade. And so you go to in-stock trades, which is you can save up to 37% off of trade cover prices. Free shipping on orders over $50. There are over 5,400 trade paperbacks in stock and available for order. I'm going to imagine there's more than that now, unless they haven't added any since we started doing this. New releases are listed every single Wednesday, and they usually ship within 48 hours. You can go to www.instocktrades.com. And if you were interested in this month's book of the month, that's All-Star Superman Volume 2. Probably even volume 1 if you wanted, but volume 2 is available for 47% off the cover price, which is such a good deal. And stop waiting for the absolute, which you don't know is coming, and read this really good comic book, for God's sakes.
No, everybody's assuming it's coming, and no one has even mentioned that it's possibly coming.
If nobody buys it, they're definitely not coming. So
yeah.
Buy the good story. They're in hardcovers. It's very nice.
On to the voicemail. Our first caller's got a question that we've pondered quite a bit.
Hi, this is Corey from Scranton, Pennsylvania, and I was just wondering what your guys' casting choices are for the new Captain America, the First Avenger movie that's going to be released. Thanks.
You know, I literally had this conversation at dinner earlier this week, and I came up empty.
You can't do it.
Yeah.
I've racked my brain for 2 years, however long we've been talking about this.
Well, remember we had that contest?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Two and a half years ago to cast an Avengers movie and Captain America was one that nobody could get.
Yeah.
Because everybody's like, I don't think the person exists. Like there may be somebody out there that you've never heard of, but or it may be that they'll cast somebody who you wouldn't have suggested, and then when they do it, like they inhabit the role and you say, oh, this is perfect, but this is why I'm not a casting director. But he's so hard. Like
he's iconic. He's too
iconic.
He's not
old, but he's not young, and he's, you know, big and sort of imposing but not scary. It's just he's a super soldier. He's like the perfect dude.
It was interesting because actually Jeff from the Totally Rad Show threw the name of the guy that plays the mentalist on CBS.
He's too old. He's
That was the criticism that he was too old.
That's the problem. Every time you have this discussion, everybody throws out every blonde actor that's currently working in Hollywood. Yeah. And the problem is
Thor wrestler thing.
Yeah. We should play Thor. The wrestler. Captain Evangelist is blonde, but he's not Captain America. I could cast him as another superhero, but not as Captain America. And first of all, he's 40, and second of all, he's too
and. He's Australian.
He's not wide-eyed enough. He's Captain America has so many important elements that are almost contradictory that it's almost impossible.
He has to be American. He has to be born in Indiana. Just kidding.
He's from New York City.
Yeah, he is.
Well, actually, Steve Rogers' family was from Indiana, and then they moved to New York City when he was young.
Okay. So. I think Matt Damon is close, but he's too small.
He totally made that up, by the way.
I don't know.
Shit.
All right. Our next voicemail has got a question about an upcoming con.
Hey, iFanboys. This is Pat from Pullman. I was wondering, are you guys going to be hitting up the Emerald City Convention this year? Coming up in a couple weeks, actually. And whether or not you are, what are your thoughts on it? I know you guys were there last year. And it's really grown in the last couple of years. It's been real cool to see a comics convention spring up in the Pacific Northwest like this. So what your thoughts are, and hopefully I will see you guys there. Later.
We went to 5 cons last year around there, and I think the most fun we had is Emerald City Con. That was a really good time, a really good con, really good city, really good experience. I mean, that was the one I look back on when I think about the cons last year and think that was a really fun time.
Yeah, the con has definitely grown. It's really good. And so I definitely, especially being in San Francisco and it being a short flight, I definitely didn't want to miss it. So actually, I'm going to be attending, as well as Gordon the intern is going to be with me.
He's still with us?
He's still with us, yeah, and he's coming out to Seattle, and we're going to rock the con. So
my dry clean is piling up.
Yes, but unfortunately,
let him know that.
Okay, well, let him know. Unfortunately, you guys aren't going to be joining us, though, right?
There was an incident in San Francisco, and I've been banned from the con circuit. actually, no, there's we're not. Connor and I are not going. But if you were in the New York City area on April 1st, that's a Wednesday, you may want to keep your calendar slightly clear if you are a fan of Geoff Johns. That's all I can say at this time. Keep your eyes out. I'll tell you more later.
Yes, stay tuned. Yeah,
that's why we're not going.
So it's
going
to be a busy, busy week for iFanboy in New York and in Seattle. So, but if you're going to the Emerald City Comic-Con, look for us. I'm thinking of trying to do maybe an informal meetup or something like that. So if you're going, keep checking iFanboy.com for details. If you have any other questions, you can call and leave us a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697.
And that is your show for the week. There's your show.
There's your show.
check out the whole written pick of the week review that Connor wrote and every pick of the week review we've ever written, almost. And all the other comic book discussion and all this stuff, the end of the great Battlestar Galactica live blogging thing that was good.
We broke the website.
Yes, we did.
Damn right. Good work. I learned that I can't do that. I can't pay attention to the show, read the stuff, be witty, and type at the same time. So you have skill. I can't do it. go to ifanboy.com, though. You can check out the social network links at ifanboy.com/about. And you can go to the store, which is ifanboy.com/store, and then /Amazon. The store will show you where you can become a member. Connor's going to tell you all about that. And Amazon's where you can buy stuff for Amazon and indirectly, without any effort on your own, support iFanboy. Good stuff.
If you really want to help iFanboy, you can do that by becoming an iFanboy member. That's really, really important. You can do that for $4 a month or $42 a year. With that, you can iFanboy prize pack, which includes a sticker, some buttons, and a comic book from our collection. Or you can become a high-level member and for $10 a month or $100 a year. You get the prize pack plus a special edition iFanboy members t-shirt. And that really helps us out. We still need more members. We are not at our goal. We need it helps keep the show going. It helps keep us going to cons and doing all the events and stuff. And it all costs money, and we don't take any for the shows and the website. So that's one way you can help keep iFanboy going. So become an iFanboy member. We really appreciate it. It really helps. Another way to help is you can buy a Herm t-shirt, which is something we've been selling for a while. And actually, as of this recording, there's only about 2 or 3 left. So if you were thinking about getting a Herm shirt and you wanted to buy a men's extra large, because that's all we got left, go to the store and get that. We've been doing members giveaways periodically, and our very next giveaway is happening in the beginning of April, and it is for an original piece of Mike Allred art. It's a page from one of his books. What book is it from, Ron?
Red Rocket 7.
Red Rocket 7. That's happening the first half of April. How do you get involved in that giveaway? Well, you become a member. We pull from the members list, randomly pick a person to win that page. It's going to happen the beginning of April, and you can check that page out at ifanboy.com.
Yeah.
So thanks, and become a member. We'd really appreciate it. Also, just a quick update. We sent out about two-thirds of the membership packets. I know people have been asking, sending emails. So we have about a third left. We're sending those out in April again. So if you haven't gotten yours yet, just hold tight. It's coming. There's about a third of you who haven't gotten it. You'll get them soon.
Excellent. And if you go to ifanboy.com, you might notice that we also do a video show every Wednesday. You can also check it out at revision3.com/ifanboy. And you can get it on iTunes, on TiVo, on YouTube, anywhere else you like to watch video. This past week, we dove into Final Crisis and kind of gave it its, okay, it's over, what do we think of it? And this coming week, we received a challenge from one of the comic publishers, and we took it. We dove into the Top Cow line of comics and really, you know, we all read Witchblade, Darkness, the pilot season, all that kind of stuff, and talk about the Top Cow books, which we don't normally talk about as much. So if you're curious to see what we thought of it, tune in on Wednesday at ifanboy.com or revision3.com/ifanboy.
Sweet. Remember the old shirt, the blue one, says ifanboy on the front and says intern on the back? You can be an intern. You can still get those at the revision3.com store, which is revision3.com/store. I know, amazing. The shirts are now $15.99, and there are some of those left, definitely more than the Herm shirts, but they will not last forever.
There's lots of ways to contact us. You can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. You can call us at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. With any questions, you can also go to ifanboy.com/about, and you can find all of our social networks. And you can find us that way and be our friends. And Twitter is probably the most important one, where we announce stuff and things like that happen over Twitter. So be our friend in all kinds of ways and contact us in all kinds of ways.
Also, Connor's home number is
delete. Beep.
Oh, God. And if you like the show, help us get the word out. If you could go to iTunes and leave a review of the show, that's a great way to help other people get a feel for what the show is about and discover the show. As of now, we've got 378 reviews. It's not hard to get the 400 is in striking distance, people. 400. So so please go to iTunes, leave a review, and also, you know, tell your friends, tell your comic book store. If you got, you know, if you share the love of comics with anybody else, share the love of iFanboy. We'd really appreciate you helping us get the word out.
400 is a small percentage of the audience, and if you haven't left a review, come on. Jump on iTunes real quick.
There are literally thousands of you downloading from iTunes. We know this. So go leave a review.
We do have more reviews than Pearl Jam's 10 album. I just noticed that randomly.
And more importantly, we have more reviews than Around Comics. So let's just remember what's important here.
Well, it's hard not to be better than Around Comics.
That's not hard at all, actually.
Right. True.
It's hard not to be better. That's the thing.
Right.
Like just now, I could burp, and it would be like, wow, that was better than Around Comics. Wow. You know what we're doing? We're throwing fire.
We are. We're not better than Tom vs. the Flash, though. So.
No.
Yeah.
No one is.
So go to iTunes, leave us a review, then leave Tom vs. the Flash a review. We endorse Tom vs. the Flash. So.
If you can find a way to take reviews away from Around Comics, we would also endorse that.
Oh, I've been doing that, actually.
I've been marking them offensive. Is this offensive? Yes.
And unhelpful. Yes. This hasn't helped me.
But it's not endorsed. No.
All right, so that's it for this week's show. Until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
And I'm Josh.
And Chris Niesman's going to be mad at us.
It's publicity.